your sixth national championship. You tied Bear Bryant for most in the poll era. Take a second and hear that. What does that mean to you?
You know, right now, I'm just happy for all these folks here. I'm happy for all these folks. I'm happy for our players. I don't care anything about that, to be honest with you. This was a great win for our players, and I've never been happier in my life.
Never.
Never.
Congratulations, Nick.
Birth of children? Never. Marriage? Never. That time your daughter beat somebody's ass at a sorority party?
Oh.
Never. Well, that was a pretty good moment.
That was.
That was like I won seven. That was like number seven also, actually. Remember that when she just jacked some
guy? Yeah.
Dale, I know you remember that.
I remember that.
Like Nick Saban's daughter was going to swing on
It was
on
her
somebody.
Roommate that she swung on.
Somebody got a little... Yeah. Somebody got a little... Because that was...
Man,
that was like about... How many years ago?
That was a while ago.
Somebody got a little talky probably about... At that time, it would have been probably like Gene Chizik. Who won with Cam? Who did Cam... No, that was Gus.
That was Gene.
That was... No, that was Gus.
Gus.
Maybe they got a little lippy like, Gus is the best in the state.
Mm. Take this. Take Here. That with you. Mm. No, that was before that. She got lippy, but that was a while ago that she did that.
Let me just see when that it was. Because I'm just going to put Nick Saban. Oh, if you type in Google Nick Saban, it goes salary, age, daughter. In that order. Kristen Saban faces trial. For, 2014.
Was it?
For beating sorority sister. Yeah.
But the fight happened 2010. The trial, I guess, didn't happen.
Yeah.
The fight happened 2010?
Yes. And the trial
I thought
come?
I was here.
Yeah, well, yeah.
But the trial was 4 years later?
Saban's pretty powerful.
Well, you think Governor Saban can't get that thing stalled? And, oh, by the way, she got clemency. okay, so Iskelski says 9 greater than 6, 9 greater than 5. Actually, Phil Jackson has 11. Actually, he has 11, 5 with the Lakers and 6 with the Wolves.
We're not even arguing another sport.
Well, he had.
Well, I mean, we could.
Well, he had Jordan and Pippen, and he had Shaq, and he had Paul Gasol and Kobe. Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say because in the NBA, one team dominates. I mean, we've said this. I mean, we look at the NBA now. If you've got LeBron. Or your Golden State, or your San Antonio. That's it. You can't. That's the only teams that can win ever. That's it.
It seems like Phil's never mentioned as the greatest coach ever, and probably because of the talent he's had. But there is something to be said. He deserves to be in the conversation because there's something to be said for being able to get guys to play together with all those egos. Because it's a huge ego. The Tex Winter had the triangle offense that really got things going offensively for the Bulls, but.
Well, you got to have a good assistance too, like just like Tex Winter. But I think did he not tarnish it just a little bit with his stint with the Knicks? And I know it was as a GM, but I think all of that genius kind of wore off after what all the Knicks fans just saw out of Phil Jackson and his basketball guru-ness. Not so much in New York when he had Michael and he had Scotty and Kobe and Shaq. And Powell, then he won championships. I don't know. If you're gonna do that, Red Auerbach is the greatest. I mean, because Red Auerbach had 11. He had 11 as well, right? Then Red Auerbach have so Red Auerbach. I don't think it's just the most. I think it's what you did with what you had versus what the rest of the league was. And let's face it, the Bulls just dominated. Now they dominated some good teams. Those Portland teams were great. They didn't have to. They didn't have to go through Seattle. They had Portland. They had the Utah teams. They had to obviously the Rockets weren't able to get there, but they were great teams at that time. So it was a difficult time, but the Bulls were just that much better than everybody else. And I think that's what with Saban. I mean, look at what he brings in on the field. He's got freshmen that are 5-star. He's got the best talent. He has the pick of the litter. Every single year. If Alabama offers, it's different than everybody else.
Why?
Because
he created it.
It valid. Well, granted, he did. There's no question.
Alabama didn't matter as much before he got there.
No. But if Alabama offers now, it's the first thing on everybody's list.
But that's because of him, though.
When it validates a high school player's career.
But it's because of him.
It is.
It's what he's built. That's why this is really tricky. Like, if you just took Belichick versus Saban, here's the two things you say. Right off the bat, you say Belichick's got Brady. So that's null and void. Okay, but Nick Saban has legitimately, there's going to be six teams at most that he'll compete against, probably about four that he'll compete against, probably one team in the SEC, and then there's three wild cards in the rest of college football that Alabama will compete against potentially in any given year. But you know Alabama will be there. So, but Tom Brady and the Patriots have to compete against salary cap, free agency, injury, parity. There's a tremendous amount that they have to compete. Mm-hmm. And in what world does Tom Brady go out and the backup quarterback's better? There's not a world where that exists. You know, so the Tom Brady argument, I get it. It's easy to make. But I kind of, you know, I see what you're saying, too, is that the reality is Alabama's really not, like, Nick Saban can control his roster every single, it's easier to build a bully in college football.
Absolutely.
Nick Saban would be, if it's all about winning, he'd be dumb to ever leave Alabama, because now he created this thing where everyone wants to go to Alabama and go win national championships and go to the NFL. He won a national championship at LSU. You know, he did something that no one, well, less kind of backed into one, thanks to some, that was weird to lose against Arkansas and win a national championship. Right. Like, how do you lose your last regular season game and get into a national championship
thanks
game?
To West Virginia.
Of course, some would say, you mean like Alabama?
Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah.
Yeah, just like that.
Just like that, actually.
Well, right. But that was a two-loss team as well. But here's the deal is with Belichick, does he have the best players? Does he accumulate the best players every year? No, he doesn't. Belichick can't, because there's a draft, and every other NFL team has excellent, excellent athletes and players. Alabama is playing in the best conference, and you can make all the claims that you want about the SEC over the last 10 years. I don't think it's not even arguable. This year, okay, it wasn't as deep as it normally is, but there are so many good, good players. He gets 25 a year. He gets the best 25 a year. And then you go to war from that. Now, is it easy to win at the highest level every single year? No. Is he unbelievable with his coaching staff and how he the process and everything that he has to do to get them there? Yes. But he has the best players. So just like Phil Jackson had the best players,
but
Nick Saban has the best players.
So they're not given to him.
No, not given to him. They weren't given to him. He has to get them, but he has the best players. Now, you look at the marketing from this thing. I loved it. I watched a lot of the pregame. You know, Kirby Smart did every interview he could, because this is a marketing edge. Because when Nick Saban walks into a house of a kid, he's a superstar. He's the biggest star that these people have ever met in their lives because every year he is what he is on national television. It was to see Kirby Smart and what he did on how he was marketing. And all of these coaches that are doing this thing, you watched it last night, mm-hmm. and your wife really enjoyed it.
I didn't watch all of it. I only watched probably a quarter. But it's brilliant.
It is brilliant.
To watch, it just if you're a football fan, because you learn so much from these guys.
I watched it in the...
Now, Mike Gundy was terrifying. Dell, did you watch any of it on the channel on the Megacast? Mike Gundy has like black hair. He's clearly dyed it.
Yes.
So his scruff is gray.
Yeah.
It's black on top. It looks like a wig. Like it's the way that it's parted or whatever. It looks just like he's wearing just some scary wig for like a Joe Dirt wig. And I was just scared whenever they got tight on him, because I got an ultra 4K TV. And it's like, ooh, this doesn't look right.
No, he and Kale both have the most unbelievably dark, dark, dark hair. And Kale said, I said, Kale was here for the Touchdown Club. I said, Kale, come on, dude. You can ease up on that, what you're putting in, how you're dyeing your hair. I have never dyed my hair in my life. That's a Gundy thing. It is an unbelievable Gundy thing that they can have the darkest hair. I'm not sure that Mike is dyeing it, if you want to know the truth.
It's got to be, because it is almost a different color on the sides.
But like, listen.
It wasn't during the year. This is a different, it's a different shade. It's like Mike got the wrong box.
So your wife was watching it with you.
Yeah.
My wife too, at the semifinals, I watched it, and she was like, Can you turn this crap off? Listening to six guys talk about a play for 20 minutes is the worst television I've ever seen in my life. And I couldn't be more enthralled. And your wife was the same way. Turn this crap off. Mm-hmm. I want to watch the regular game.
Yep.
I loved it, though.
I did, too. I liked the interaction between the coaches. It was, man, the stuff. You know, Sumlin, it kind of reminds you. Because you think, well, Cliff Kingsbury was the coach of Johnny Manziel. Well, then he had this offense coordinator. Man, somebody knows the stuff. You just watch him. He's telling you, all right, this was – he's calling for what he thinks a play should be. Then he shows that this is a quarterback RPO, like a quarterback draw RPO, where they set it up where if the quarterback wanted, he could read and run around the goal line. And then they both – then, like, immediately, I don't know if it was Mike Bobo or David Cutcliffe pointed out, he wasn't even throwing to Calvin Ridley, no. Which right as it happened on the broadcast, I'm like,
no,
what?
And we saw that too. But Harris probably would have caught it anyway, right? Am I right?
Oh, I didn't think so. Oh, I thought he would have got closed out.
If
you look,
he was right behind him, and if Ridley didn't cut him off, Harris probably had that.
Or I mean, there was contact. It might have been pass interference. I'm not sure. But that guy was closing on him. He might have got there before the ball got there.
There were a couple of shady calls that Georgia fans can get a little like. The offsides on the punt, of course, it didn't turn into a first down, but that guy wasn't offsides.
It was a false start that should have been called.
Yeah, that was a false start.
He wasn't offsides.
He wasn't even remotely offsides.
So it wouldn't have been a block punt either way.
And I guess, I don't remember seeing a replay that showed it to me. The pass interference, because David Cutcliffe
by Parrish?
Immediately said, that's over, that's uncatchable. But no, it was way down the right sideline.
Yes, that was Parrish interfered.
Was 14. It a clear
He had a horrible game.
Interference, sideline interference, 15-yard penalty. Was that like
apparently
that
they said
called.
He pushed him out of bounds.
Okay.
And I don't know if you could call that uncatchable because if he doesn't make the contact, would he have caught up with the ball? I don't know. But Parrish had a horrific game. But what about Mekhi Brown that he's throwing punches at his coach on the sideline and nothing?
Well, I kept trying to figure out, was that the coach he was going after, or was he trying to go beyond the coach? You mean when he had the
he had his helmet,
helmet
and he
in his hand?
Jabbed the coach or whoever that staffer was.
Was that who he was? Was his target, or was there somebody beyond him?
I think it was the coach.
I kept going back trying to find it out. I mean, he was hot for a long time. Then he comes in
and
makes a tackle that I thought had ended someone's life on a kickoff. Man.
Yeah, one
arm. That guy was a little out of control.
He said he apologized after the game. Said, that's not me. Well, it is.
Well, I mean, it was you for about half an hour on the sideline.
729-713-780.
That's not me.
I know.
I'm going to use that on my wife from now on.
That's not me.
You keep leaving us all over the floor. That's not me. I want to apologize for what I just did. That's not me.
We don't even know who that guy is. Our only impression is that is you.
Yeah, it is.
That is you.
I don't know. Who's 48? No. I don't even know that guy.
Mekhi Brown. And that is him. That's what we know of him. He goes after coaches on the sidelines and then comes in and makes one-handed tackles around the neck.
Did you spend $900 on a new TV? Look, I don't usually do those things. That's not me. I want to apologize about what I spent. That's not
I
me.
Usually don't do that. I've done it
Were
once.
Were you all night playing poker?
That's not me.
I don't usually stay out and drink Coors Light all day, and that's John.
That's me.
That is
me. All right, 729 ESPN 97.5. Come on in.